Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Rathmanner. Well, have you ever wondered how your faith would stand up in the face of incredible suffering or have had to face a trial that was completely unexpected? Well, today we get to hear the story of Larissa and Ian Murphy and how an unexpected circumstance changed the course of their lives forever and how their faith and their marriage has blossomed despite of it. Larissa and Ian's story began like that of many of us. They met in college, spent months getting to know each other, and fell in love. He started ring shopping and she started planning for the future, and they could have never imagined a car accident and how it would change their lives forever. Ian was brought to the hospital with multiple injuries, including a traumatic brain injury, which would keep him in a coma for a time and ultimately in a wheelchair and in need of constant care. So Larissa was faced with a choice to stay and say goodbye to the life she had imagined, to take very literally the vows in sickness and health, even before she had recited them, or to leave the person that she loved. Well, she stayed. And her and Ian's story of love and faith in action is one that will likely cause all of us to think about the faith and the suffering and love in a new way. Larissa and Ian have captured their story in a book called 828, which came out in August. And Larissa joins us now to tell us more about it. Larissa, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Congratulations on finishing your first book.
Thank you.
I do see that you were a writer before that, so a blogger, and I know that you are a journaler. What made you decide to put your story into a book form?
Well, I've always wanted to write a book, and since, you know, childhood and teen years, didn't really know what my story would be, though. And after Ian's accident, his dad and I had tried to start a book several times because he also had a desire for several years to write a book. And at the time, we just didn't really know what the closure to the story was. And there were just a lot of questions still about Ian's health and what type of progress he would make. So then once we were married, that kind of gave a natural closure, even though in some ways, in many ways, it was just the beginning of our story. And so we just then had the opportunity brought to us with the publisher and just felt like it was God opening a door for us to tell our story. And it was exciting because we'd had that desire for a long time and then saw, okay, here it is. Here's our first story.
So you first met in college. Did you know at that point that Ian was someone that you might fall in love with, or did that take a while?
Well, I don't think it took a while because we were only dating for 10 months before his accident. And before that, we had known each other for just a few months. So probably it happened relatively quickly. And we had a lot of conversations in our relationship about marriage because we just wanted to date with intention, for lack of better description, and just be looking at it for, is this somebody that I would want to spend my life with? So we'd had lots of conversations about the future in that context.
Well, and you wrote about some of how you talked about your spirituality, you talked about God, and that Ian was really intentional about helping with both of your spiritual growth and that path. Can you tell me more about that?
He was so good at just teaching me even basic foundational truths about God and was always bringing me back to that. And he just had an understanding of God that I hadn't reached yet. And I was just able to glean a lot from him. And even just seeing how he lived his life differently because of his love and fear of God. And so even just watching the way he approached our relationship and other relationships, it just by default was showing me God. And it was wonderful because he would just be encouraging us to, you know, be going through a book of the Bible together, and encouraged me to make sure I was having regular fellowship with other women and just talking about how I was doing in our relationship with other women who love the Lord. And just, it was kind of embedded in everything we did because that's the way he was living his life. So then that then dictated how our relationship was built.
So, Larissa, take me back to you've made some plans, you've talked about marriage, you're growing spiritually together, and then you find out about the car accident. Tell me about seeing him in the hospital and hearing the extent of his injuries.
It was horrible, for lack of a better word. I mean, there was grace definitely carrying us through it, but anytime you see someone that you love who has been in any type of accident or in any type of medical condition, it's really hard. And so, you know, we spent so much time in his hospital room, and we were told initially that he was failing 4 out of 5 brain activity tests. And we just spent time praying with him, singing worship songs, just praying that God would have mercy on him. And the one thing that I just was always very grateful for was that his face was unscathed, and so he still looked like himself, even though he had tubes attached to him and casts and gauze everywhere. He still looked like Ian. And so then once we received words that his brain had started to respond to some tests, it continued to be a long road of many days in the hospital with him. He was in the hospital for seven weeks before transferring to a rehab unit. And, you know, it was all just very surreal. And, you know, I think still took me many years to think in that that was my boyfriend and that that was our new reality.
So you ended up moving in with his family to kind of help him recover. That must have been a really difficult decision to say, you know what, I'm in this. This is the person I love, and I'm in this. Can you tell me about how you came to that decision? And I'm guessing it was through a lot of prayer and thought and conversations.
Yeah, well, the initial decision, you know, his parents had offered while Ian was still in the ICU, the first time we left the hospital, I remember his mom just saying, why don't you come stay with us? And it was such an instant relief because they were going through what I was going through. And so I knew that I just felt this instant comfort of they're going to understand and they're going to be able to support me. And so the decision to move in with his family was actually very easy. And then once he moved home from the hospital, it was, you know, I stayed and shared a room with his little sister, which was, you know, some of our favorite memories because we got to share a room together. And I think it was just a daily, I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to be apart from Ian. And just because of the nature of his injury, being at his home and able to, you know, spend time with him, even if it was just an hour or two that he had free during his day where he was awake, it was just, I was able to be much more available to kind of capture those moments since they were so slim, and just to be able to be a distraction for him. So, you know, the initial decision to live with his family was quite easy, but then it was just a gradual, you know, we're just going to take this a day at a time and see what God does to heal Ian. And, you know, we had lots of conversations that I didn't want to make a decision to leave before Ian could talk. And I didn't want to leave, but I especially wasn't going to make that decision before I could understand what was going on in his heart. And also, you know, I knew that I just had faith that once he could start talking, we could have a marriage if he could communicate with me. And it was okay if he was in the wheelchair for the rest of his life, but we needed to be able to have conversations.
So what I saw in your video is that you and Red is that during that time when he wasn't communicating, that you would just talk to him. What would you talk about?
Probably lots of really boring things. I would read to him a lot. I would just talk to him about what was going on in his family, or talk about memories or my day. Just, you know, I still felt that he was my best friend. So whatever I would be normally talking to him about, I just continued to talk to him. And I read to him a lot and just wanted him to keep hearing my voice and wanted him to know that we were there with him and that we weren't going to leave him, and just wanted to provide him some distraction so he had some things to listen to other than the thoughts in his own head.
So eventually you wrote that he did begin to communicate. He did begin to talk back to you, and that Ian's dad was then diagnosed with brain cancer. And how did that affect your and Ian's decision to move forward in your relationship?
Well, one of his dad's biggest priorities once he realized he wasn't going to live that much longer was he really wanted to see Ian and I make a decision one way or the other. You know, we had been at that time dating for 3 years post-accident, and, you know, we were kind of waiting for the right time, and Steve just wanted to ensure that we didn't stay in this gray area of dating and being committed to each other, but not being committed under the covenant of marriage. And he just was really encouraging us to make a decision one way or the other, knowing that neither of the decisions would be wrong or unbiblical. It was just, you know, what did we think God was laying out for us in our future? And so he had lots of conversations with Ian about it and lots of conversations with me. And he really just wanted us to be able to have faith to take that next step, whatever it may be.
And so tell me about how the days would go then. Are you constantly caring for Ian at this point? Is someone helping? What was your day like?
When we first got married, I started working full-time, and he has a full-time caregiver who's been with him since the day he came home from the hospital, who's wonderful. And so he gets to spend time at therapy and painting. He goes into his best friend and him had started a videography company, and his friend kept the company going after Ian's accident. So he's able to spend time at the office with him. And then when I come home from work, we just have very normal nights, I think, you know, making dinner, watching movies, reading, hanging out with our family. And we have a ton of support through his family as well. His family all lives nearby. And so between his family and his caregiver, we have lots of support.
So were there any concerns of your family or your friends when you told them, yep, we are going to get married and continue the plans that we had?
I think the people who really know us and love us, they just wanted to make sure that we weren't entering into that under any compulsion. Because our story had gained some, you know, public attention, they and our pastors, too, just wanted to make sure that we were responding to the desires of our hearts and not any type of pressure. And so, yeah, we had people ask us the hard questions, which I think any couple needs to have asked of them. And, you know, they just wanted to ensure that it's what Ian wanted and what I wanted. And, you know, we have incredible support from both of our families who love us and help us to make this marriage work. I think any marriage is a group effort.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a link to a video of Ian and Larissa's story, their wedding, as well as a story of how it came to be that is available on our website. If you just go to the Connecting Faith show page, you'll be able to see that. And we also have several copies of Larissa and Ian's book that we'd love to put in your hands. If you'd like a copy on that same show page, you can put in a request and we will get those out to the first three people who put a request in today. And we will be right back with Larissa Murphy. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. So great to have you here today. We are talking with Larissa Murphy. Larissa is the subject of a new book that she wrote with her husband, Ian, called 828. And it's their story of love and life after a traumatic brain injury of Ian. And Larissa, why 828? What's the significance of that for you and Ian?
Oh, well, 828, August 28th is his dad's birthday. And then when we were starting to plan our wedding, I remember sitting in his room and thinking, you know, we're looking at the August timeline. I was like, I wonder what day of the week your dad's birthday is on. And the year we were getting married, it was on a Saturday. So it just seemed perfect and very fitting for us to get married on his dad's birthday. And also, just a reference to Romans 8:28, the promise that God works all things together for the good of those who are called according to his purpose. And that was a scripture that, you know, Steve really used to just keep encouraging us as a family to know that God has a good and perfect plan set out for us, even when we can't see it.
So a lot of things have happened since that video was released. What was that, 4 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
Tell me about what's happened since then and how has your life changed? How has Ian progressed?
Well, one of the most fun things about being married to Ian is that things change a lot with him and he continues to make progress. So when that video came out, I'm pretty sure he wasn't even working on walking. And since then, he's able to walk with a cane and a support of one person and was progressing so much in his walking that he became able to have a surgery on his leg that would help him to even make further progress with walking. And so he's just kind of finished out his recovery of the surgery and will start rehabbing soon. And so that alone is going to totally change our lives and really already has. You know, we are using a wheelchair less and less often, and just Ian is able to gain some independence, and it's just good for our bodies to move. So that's been a major change. And, you know, he continues to progress with his speech, and his cognition is totally there, and he just needs to keep practicing his enunciation and attending speech therapy. We bought a home, which has been super, super fun. And of course, everything with the book coming out, and Ian has also started selling paintings. So we have lots going on, but it's all very fun and very indicative of Ian's health continuing to improve.
So you wrote beautifully in your book that Ian's disability really helps you to understand a more Christ-like love. Can you talk more about that?
Sure. I think in a lot of ways, I know I get to experience God in just a different way than if Ian were healthy. And I mean, one of the most poignant examples to me of getting to see Christ more in our marriage because of Ian's disability is my understanding of forgiveness. Ian struggles with his short-term memory, and so if there's a conflict of some sort, Ian literally in half an hour is not going to remember it. And so he's in a way forced to hold no record of wrong. And he offers me forgiveness, and I know that he's not going to be able to recall that. And even though that can be discouraging sometimes, you know, I'd love to have a husband with a functioning short-term memory. On the other hand, it's taught me so much about forgiveness because that's what I'm to do. I'm to forget, and I'm to offer forgiveness and hold no record of wrong and erase the memory of it, because Jesus died for me and erased my sins. And so I get to experience that and see that in a much different way than if Ian were totally healthy. And so I think because of his disability, I'm just able to see God in our marriage in much different ways than if he had full health.
So there have to be days when you're frustrated or struggling or like all of us have. Where do you go at that point? Are there particular portions of scripture that you go to, or what happens?
You know, it's a variety, probably depending on how tired I am as well. Ian, you know, Ian is the most encouraging person. And when I'm struggling, it's so helpful to talk it through with him because he keeps me grounded and he points me back to, he says to me so often, Larissa, we know God is faithful and God is good to us and he's sovereign. And even those, you know, foundational truths, they just reset me and they reset my gaze. And, you know, the Psalms are very helpful because they're overflowing with honesty and comfort. And, you know, the Psalms were so instrumental even through the very intense moments of Ian's injury in the first couple of months after. And so they continue to be a comfort for me. And even just having, you know, girlfriends that I can text and just be totally honest and say, this is what I'm struggling with right now. Please pray for me and be transparent and be open with marriage is hard and marriage with a disability is hard and letting people enter into that and know how to care for us. I know it's very helpful to be able to, sometimes I think if you bottle up your fears, it can feel like if I say this out loud, something bad is going to happen. And you say it out loud and you're like, okay, I feel better because I was able to say that fear. And now someone can lead me through that under truth instead of, you know, succumbing to fear.
So in your video and in your book, you write about a gratitude wall. Tell me about that.
Well, we first started the gratitude wall after reading a book. We had read through Ian Voskamp's book about gratefulness, and I just started thinking how much I need that. And it's very easy to focus on what we had before Ian's accident or focus on the what ifs and I wishes. And so it really, you know, just kind of popped in my brain of like, I need a place to be putting this constantly. I need this in front of me all the time. And so it was funny because we were sitting on the patio and my sister-in-law was like, I have a big bulletin board I'm not using. And my mother-in-law said, I have post-it notes. And so we just kind of put it together that next day. And it really started to serve as almost became a form of a way to worship God and be able to say, these are all the good gifts that he's giving us. And then anytime people would come into our home, it was so fun for them to be able to add to that and say, like, this is what I'm thankful for, and to see that collection, it just, when you look at it, it just kind of is this breath of fresh air of, we do have so much to be grateful for.
Larissa, it has been such a gift to hear your story, yours and Ian's, and please know that we're going to be praying for you for continued recovery, for breakthroughs there, but also that God continues to sustain you and enrich your marriage. What a great opportunity to get to hear your story. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And we also have a link to that YouTube video I was talking about that was shared in 2006 that highlights Larissa and Ian's journey. It has received over 10 million views and is a beautiful testimony to the marriage of Christ to the church that's reflected in the lives of these two people. And Larissa, you also have a blog, correct? Can people subscribe to that, or are there any other resources you'd like to highlight?
Sure. You can go to ianandlarissa.com. That's where we keep our blog and try to keep our readers updated on Ian's progress. And I think we'll especially be entering into a really fun season of that now as he learns to walk. So we'll hopefully be sharing lots of exciting updates there.
Great. So if you'd like to follow their story, we'll put a link to that as well on our show page. You can get any information there that you'd like as well. And don't forget, if you'd like to win a copy of Ian and Larissa's book, you can fill out a request form right there in the Connecting Faith show page. Thanks so much for joining us, and we will be right back. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today. What a great story of marriage, of commitment, And Ian and Larissa's story was actually put on video, and we're going to have a link to that YouTube video on our website at myfaithradio.com. There's actually a wealth of information that you can find on our website. You can get a podcast of this show, but every other show that we have here on Faith Radio, Chip Ingram, Austin Hill in the Morning, James McDonald, Susie Larson, and there are also several blogs that you can read from our website as well on many different categories: relationships, health and wellness, business and finance, biblical studies, evangelism, and marriage and family. In fact, starting this month, we have a new Faith Radio blog contributor writing on marriage and family, and I would love for you to meet him today. His name is Pete Larson, and he's the executive director of Family Fest Ministries, which seeks to strengthen families in the Christian faith through week-long and weekend retreats for families and one-day retreats for married and engaged couples. Pete often speaks at church youth groups, men and women's groups, conferences, and also retreats. In fact, my family has had the pleasure of going to one of his family retreats for the past decade. That's 10 years at least. Well, Pete has spent over 30 years working with family and youth in a variety of settings. He served as a youth and family minister for over a decade and spent several years leading retreats for students grades 5 through 12 at Youth Frontiers. He was also the host of the Wishing Well Show, an interactive TV program at the Minneapolis and St. Paul Children's Hospitals. He grew up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, as the ninth of 14 children. Yes, 14. He lives in Bloomington now, but with only 2 children, right, Pete?
That's right.
You didn't go for 14.
No,
okay.
Didn't.
His wife, Lynn, also lives with him, and she didn't go for 14 either.
No.
No.
She was the one that put a stop to that right away.
Gotcha. Well, it's great to have you on our show. Thank you so much.
It's great to be here. And that was a great interview with Larissa and Ian. And
What a great family. I mean, just making a commitment when, even before they'd made the vows. I think that's what's in my head is, sometimes when difficult things happen within a marriage, you can say, well, you know, I made that vow. I made that commitment. I'm going to honor that. And this happened long before that.
Yeah, it's just
even
fantastic.
Occurred.
Just fantastic.
So great. Well, we are glad to have you here on Faith Radio, and you're going to be writing about marriage and family. And, you know, one of the things that a lot of my friends ask about and just are concerned about is, how do I pass along that faith to my family? What is it I can do, or what is it I shouldn't be doing? Do you get a lot of that as well?
Well, that's a great question. And yeah, I really do. I think parents really do desire to find ways to pass faith on to their kids. They want to see their kids grow up in faith. And then we watch, and I know you've had people on talking about sticky faith, Chap Clark's great book on whether kids are going to keep that faith once they leave the house and go to college and do that sort of thing. And that's where I'm at. My kids are, you know, in college and just out of college. And so that's something that my wife, Lynn, and I have talked a lot about and thought about. And how do we get our kids to have that faith once they're out of our house? And so that is a good question.
So what is it that can be done, or that you can at least begin to think about to kind of lay that foundation for your kids to have that kind of sticky faith?
Well, there's so many different things, and every family is going to be different. That's the one thing. There's no simple answer to this. But I think there's some things that we keep in mind when we're talking about it. First of all, Jesus said in the Great Commission, go into all the world and preach the good news. And I really believe that starts at home. The Great Commission begins at home, that's where we're supposed to start passing on faith, is to our children and to their friends and to the people around us, starting there. So, you know, when you look and talk to parents, and the ones that I've talked to, I would say, and research will bear this out, 4 out of 5 parents say they believe it's their prime responsibility to pass on faith to their kids. Yet about 83% of them, according to Barna Research, would say that they abdicate that to somebody else. So what they do is they say, well, I really want to pass on faith to my kids, but I don't really know how to do it, so I'm going to have my church do it instead. And I'm going to drop them off on Wednesday nights, and I'm going to assume that they're doing everything that they need to do to pass their faith on. And so they're going to turn out great, and they'll come out with a great faith. But what's really the truth about that is, this is our job as parents to pass on faith to our kids. It's not the job of our church. Our churches can help, and they do a great job. In fact, I thought about this one time when my son was learning to drive, and I dropped him off at driver's education, and we met with the person that was going to teach the class, and he said, don't worry, parents, we're going to teach your kids to drive. And I went out and I thought, okay, that's great. Somebody's going to teach him to drive. And then it sort of hit me. This person's not going to teach my son to drive. I've been teaching my son to drive since he was real young. Mm-hmm. When he was 4 years old, he got his first bike. And I ran behind him and I helped him learn how to balance. And we talked about the rules of the road and where you have to stop and look both ways and that sort of thing. And then when he was 15 and he got his permit and I was taking him out driving around the neighborhood and doing those different things. But even before that, as he watched Lynn and I drive, he was learning how to drive.
Absolutely. If you're texting and talking on the phone and reading your book while you're driving, then your child is probably going to do that.
That's exactly right. And so I think that's sort of the same thing when we think, oh, I'll just drop my kids off at church, that if they're not watching us live out our faith, if they're not seeing an authentic faith in us, they really won't get it. Now, there's some things that I learned from the driver's ed test teacher. They knew some things that I didn't know. Like, yeah, I did. I used to always think, as you probably didn't, is the hand should be at 10 and 2 on the wheel.
No, you're older than me.
Yeah. Well, now my son said, Dad, you've got that wrong. They're supposed to be at 4 and 8. And I said, well, no, 10 and 2. He said, no, they've changed that because of airbags. So they'll, you know, break your wrists if you have them there. So now, and I think that's the same with the church. The church can teach some things to my kids that I may not know and may not understand, but they're a resource for me. They're not the prime giver of faith.
Right. Otherwise, we're just going to teach our kids to take their kids to church.
That's exactly right.
And that's not what we want to teach them.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So what are some ways that they're looking at us to see how we'll react? What are maybe a situation or two where they're seeing what you do and how you react, and they're going to remember that?
Well, kids are watching us all the time. They are great observers. They may not be great listeners sometimes, as you know, but they watch and they see what we do and they see how we respond to different things, whether it's something good that happens, whether it's a crisis that's going on, whether it's we're in a place where we can react to something and they're watching how we do that, whether it's, you know, driving down the road and somebody cuts us off. How do we respond to that? They're learning and they're watching all of these things. And they're sort of becoming experts at us as we're becoming experts at them. Mm. In fact, I had a parent not long ago came to me and she asked him in parenting advice and she was kind of downhearted about the whole thing. And she said, I just don't feel like I understand how to parent my kid. And I said, well, what do you mean? She said, well, there's all these experts out there with their books and I don't get it. I don't know how to do it. And I reminded her that you may not be an expert in parent theories, but you're an expert at your son. You've been with your son for 15 years. Nobody knows him like you and your husband. And I started thinking about that even more, and it dawned on me, by the time a kid is 4 years old, we've spent enough time as a parent studying them to have an equivalent of a master's degree in our kid. By the time they're six, we have a doctorate. Now, I mean, nobody knows our kids more than we do. And so if there's parents out there who feel like, boy, I'm not an expert. I can't do this. I don't know what to do. Just realize that God has placed you in a place to be the expert for your kid. Mm. You know your kid better than anybody else. And so as we become experts on our kids, they become experts on us. They're watching us. And I think those are really important things to remember.
Mm. Well, and it could maybe be something as simple as what you share at the dinner table, instead of, do a lot of families do the formal devotions where you sit down as a group, or when your kids get older, do you get to do that, or should you be changing your tactics a little bit to be able to talk about your faith?
Well, I think that's a great question. I think you have to adjust how you pass on faith to your kids depending on how old they are. Kids at a younger age are going to pretty much follow what the parents do and what they say, and as they talk about God, kids can even mimic back the same words that their parents have said. As our kids have grown older, we've had to change that. So when our kids were younger, we would do family devotionals. You know, we'd sit on their bed, we'd have prayer time. You know, we'd read the Bible stories. Even before they could read, we'd pull out the picture Bibles, and that was a lot of fun. And as they grew older, they didn't want so much a part of that. We had to find other ways. We had to be more intentional, more creative in how we were going to find teachable moments for our kids. I remember one time we were on a ski trip in the mountains, And I was going up the chairlift with my 13-year-old son, and I thought, this is a teachable moment. And I said, how do you think all this got here, all this beauty, this these mountains? And he started talking about tectonics and all these different things. I said, no, before that. And he said, well, God put it there. And we had this talk about creation, and it was a better devotional than we had sitting on his bedside talking about it, because it was happening right there, and he could see it. And I think that's an important thing. One of the things my wife is really good about is just bringing up God in different things, different conversations, saying a good word for God. And maybe it's just, oh, isn't it amazing how God created this? Isn't it amazing what God did here? And so our kids are hearing that all the time as teenagers, as young adults. They know it's something that we think about a lot.
I know when I grew up, I grew up in a Scandinavian family, and they're not big on sharing.
Right.
But as the years have gone on, and I've been able to ask my parents questions about their faith, then I hear this wealth of information of struggles that they went through, or how God really showed up in their marriage or in their work life or whatever it was that they were going through, and they're able to share those stories. And I just put in the back of my head, well, I should be sharing experiences that I have with my kids so that they can see and experience my faith in action, so that they know that things do happen and we do have struggles, and that is when our faith can kick in, instead of just holding it back and creating this facade that everything's fine.
Well, I think that's right. And I think we live in a culture that we try to mask things to make it look like we're always doing great and everything's great. But kids know, especially in their families, they know the truth. They know what's going on in the families. They know when mom and dad are struggling. And I think it's one of the best things that we can do is to just be honest with our kids, just saying, I'm really having a tough time right now. I deal with, you know, families and parents who are kind of in that middle ground where they're raising their kids, but they're also dealing with their own parents, and their parents aren't as healthy, and maybe they're moving to an assisted living place. And that puts on a lot of stress for those parents. And for them to be able to share with their kids, this is really hard. I'm struggling through this. I don't know what to do. I don't have all the answers. I think kids appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And it's a great place to learn how to work through some of those different issues and different problems.
And it does cross that line between what you do here at Sunday school and how you see what you learned working in your life and in the life of your family. And that seems to be where all of a sudden it clicks.
That's exactly right, Joe. And I think sometimes the lessons from Sunday school, if they don't translate to real life, they don't really get picked up. We can talk a lot about how to love and do those things, but until we actually do them, kids really don't get that.
Well, we're talking with Pete Larson today. Pete is the executive director of Family Fest Ministries. He's also a new contributor, a blog contributor on our website at myfaithradio.com in the area of marriage and family. So check that out. And he will be contributing every month at least an article or two on some ideas of how to grow faith in your family, and also talking about marriage as well. So check that out on myfaithradio.com. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Pete Larson. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Joe Rathmanner, and in studio today with me is Pete Larson. He's the executive director of Family Fest Ministries, and they do ministry all across the Midwest, but especially in Minnesota, where they conduct week-long and as well as weekend-long retreats for families and also for marriages. So we're going to chat a little bit about that as we're talking to Pete about how to make our faith just stick with our kids. And one of the ways that we found, and it's really through the retreats we've gone through Family Fest, is by going places together to talk about your faith, to learn about your faith, to worship together. And you do a great weekend-long retreat. Why did you start doing that?
Well, I was part of a Bible study group back in the 90s. We meet every Thursday night, and somebody suggested we should just get away for a weekend, that life gets so busy, let's take our kids away. And so we just went up to a little resort in northern Minnesota and had a weekend together. There was 10 families that came. We actually brought some babysitters with us so we could have some time just for adults, which was really helpful. And so we spent that weekend just having some time of worship, and we had a speaker and some time to break down what they were talking about and discuss that a little bit, but also to play with our kids. And we got out in the snow and the ice, you know, ice rink, and played boot hockey and, you know, went sliding and did all the fun things that you can do. At the end of the retreat, we said, we got to do this again next year. We thought, let's make it a tradition. And so we started making that tradition every year. And soon we started getting so many people that we were turning folks away. We're like, we don't have enough space, you know. And so what we decided to do is turn it into a ministry. We recognized that there were other families that were in that same position where we get so busy with our lives that we don't have time to really focus on our kids and our families. So we wanted to create a getaway retreat for families that is really fun, that's high energy, but also provides families with some great faith tools and elements that they can incorporate into their families. So we've been doing that now for over 15 years, mm-hmm. and having a great time as couples and families come together and do that.
And so why is that important for us to do as families? I mean, I know why it's important for our family. My kids look forward to it every year, not only being able to spend a weekend with their parents out doing fun things. I mean, you're right. You're out on the lake skating. We are playing boot hockey. We are inside on jumpy jumps. I mean, there's just a wealth of things to do. There's dog sledding. There's sledding. There's all kinds of things that you can do out in the northern part of Minnesota, which is just a beautiful place. But there's also time that we get to spend with our kids, and we get to talk about, there's kind of forced time to be able to sit and actually talk about what you're experiencing. And I feel like that is such a gift in these days where we are running 14 different directions every day. Well, 14 with you with having 14 brothers. I only have two. I still feel like I'm running 14 different directions. So this was like an antidote to that.
Yeah, that's right. And as we know, people are so busy today. It's busier than we've ever been, I think. And I really recognize that. In fact, can I just tell a quick story? I was doing a little house project in my house recently last fall. And I needed to rent a tool for this, and I was cutting some block with this wall, and I was told if I can get the saw back by a certain amount of time, I would be able to, you know, get a price reduction. So I had till 3 o'clock to get this saw back, and at 2:35 I made my last cut, and I went to my wife and said, I'm going to run this saw back because I got to save the money. And so I ran to the rental store, and as I was driving down this highway, something caught my eye, and it was a kid running across the highway. And I thought, well, that's kind of strange. There's no houses or apartments around here. And I thought about it for a second, and I kept going because I had to get my saw back. Mm. And as I pulled into the parking lot to return the saw, I thought about that kid, and I thought, you know, was there anybody else with him? I didn't see anybody. And I thought, what was my hurry? And so I quickly got the saw back. I jumped back in my car. I drove back a couple of blocks, and I saw the little kid on the sidewalk, and I stopped, and I got out of my car and I walked over to him, and I realized he was much younger than I initially thought. And I asked him his name. He said, Robert. And I said, Robert, how old are you? And he said, I'm 2.
Oh.
And I said, Robert, what are you doing out here all by yourself? He said, I just want to go home. Mm. He was a lost child. And I was so caught up in my agenda, all the things that I had to do, that I didn't stop to help a lost child. And it really hit me right then. God really put something in my heart that I need to have margin in my life, that I need to carve out more time for my family, for people in need around me. And I think we've just become too busy. Mm-hmm. We just don't have enough margin. And so one of the things that we try to do for families is give them some margin to say, you're going to take a weekend. We're going to provide everything. You know, you don't have to cook. You don't have to clean. You can just be with your family and be with other families who are very much like you, wanting to pass on faith to their families. And what an amazing thing that is when your kids see other families doing that as well.
Right.
And they see their parents' friend or their friends' parents up leading music,
praying together,
doing a skit, or praying together, or you know, the lessons learned. One of the things that really is fun about the camps that we do is we'll bring 35 to 45 high school and college age students, many of them who have grown up coming to our retreats, who are trained, and then they lead programs for those younger kids, newborns through ninth grade. And it's really neat to watch as they're sharing their faith, they're sharing the gospel with these younger students. And I think that's really powerful for them. It becomes sort of a mission experience for them, as well as a lot of fun, because they get to be with their families as well.
Well, I highly recommend it as well. It's just great to get away with your kids and also to show them that they don't have to be in that hurried state of mind all the time either, because we've created this, unfortunately, for most of our families. So to be able to give them a break too is just a gift. And you try to do the same kind of thing for marriages as well, for couples. Just, it may not be a whole weekend, but at least for a day to get away. And what's the purpose of going to a marriage retreat? Why do you recommend something like that for couples?
Well, this really started after one of our family camps where a few couples and I were talking, and they said, you know, these retreats are great, but we are so busy even on the retreat with our kids. Like one person's going to take the five-year-old down to the pool and the other one's going to go out to the dog sleds. They said, we don't really connect as much as we want to. Can we do one of these without our kids? And we said, that would be great. Let's try it. And then we found that most families are so overcommitted that they couldn't even do a weekend. Part of it is they've got to get their children somewhere, and where do they stay overnight? And, you know, there's only so many grandparent weekends and friend weekends that you can find. And so we thought, what if we just did a one-day retreat, 7 hours for couples just to get away? And the idea behind this is it's not a retreat for marriages that are in critical condition. In fact, I tell couples often, this is more like a health club than a hospital for your marriage. It's a place for you to have a spa day with your spouse and just relax and laugh together. Talk about some things that you haven't had a chance to talk about. Most couples will tell you that they just don't have a lot of time to focus in on the issues that are going on in their marriage. And so what we do is we provide them that opportunity on these retreats, and we try to make it a lot of fun. We want them to laugh and enjoy the day. And so it's constantly moving. There's a lot of different elements to it. We have some different speakers that will present some different ideas on marriage, and then couples get to go have some couple time and go chew on that for a while and talk about that. So one of the things that we don't do, because most couples are always afraid, is like, are we going to have to share what's going on in our marriage with everybody
else? Will there
be
sharing?
Yeah. And we just tell them, no, there's not. But besides the sharing between you and your spouse, that's the only sharing that you have to do. So, but
it's usually the questions that the husband asked, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So, although it's funny how many husbands are the ones that initiate coming to the marriage retreat. I was kind of surprised.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there was one woman who came to the retreat, and I said, how did you hear about it? She said, well, I heard about it this morning. And I said, really? How did that work? Well, we woke up, and it was his birthday, and she said, what do you want for your birthday? He goes, well, I signed us up for a marriage booster retreat. You want to go?
Okay.
And so she did and had a great time.
Well, Pete, we've talked about a lot of different things that both families can do, that couples can do, and just that individuals can do to help grow their faith. I know that you have some resources available on your website, as well as you're going to write on our website, right?
That's right.
Where can people go if they want to find out more about Family Fest Ministries?
Well, it's pretty easy. It's www.familyfestministries.org.
And we'll put that a link on our website as well that people can click on.
That would be great.
And what kinds of things can they find there?
Well, they'll find information on any of the retreats that we do, whether it's our Summer Splash family camp, our Winter Weekend family camps, our Marriage Booster retreats, which incidentally the Marriage Booster retreats are ones that we do, but we also do them for churches. So if your church is looking for something to do, you know, to support and uplift marriages in your church, we'll come to you, which is a great thing. They'll also find some different resources, different blogs that we've put on and are linked to. So just ways to help support and uplift marriages and families.
Okay. Well, Pete Larson, it's been great to have you on our show today, and thanks for sharing your wealth of information about families and couples.
Thanks, Jill. It's been
absolutely
great.
Great to have you here, and can't wait to start reading those blogs and getting some information. If you would like to catch up on what Pete writes for his blog on marriage and family, you can go to myfaithradio.com. There's a lot of different blogs that you can see on our website. Also, if you want to get a podcast of this show or any others, you can go to the Connecting Faith show page and you can click on whichever one you've missed or whichever one you'd like to share with someone else. Maybe you have a family or a couple or a brother or sister that you want to pass on some information to. If you do, you can very easily click the share button and send that to them by Facebook or email or a text message. It's a great way to share the programming that you know and love here on Faith Radio. It's been great to have you here, and you've been listening to Connecting Faith.